From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
The Democratic Party platform doesn't even contain an affirmation of universal health coverage for all Americans. It even backed off of that while it took money from the hospital lobby, the medical lobby, the drug industry lobby, the giant HMOs, and insurance lobby.
The Green Party nominates Ralph Nader for president.
Bob Dole, senator for sale. How a man who is so courageous on the battlefield and in the hospitals could leave his courage behind when he went to Washington and become the leading political advocate of the worst big businesses around as they claw the government in terms of what they want, non-enforcement of the laws, deregulation of law and order, soft on corporate crime, massive corporate welfare, opposition to campaign finance reform, opposition to health care, opposition to consumer protection. Bob Dole sided with the corporations time and time again.
Today you'll hear Ralph Nader accept the Green Party's nomination. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now!, Public Broadcasting's only daily election show. I'm Amy Goodman. Former Arkansas Governor Jim Guy Tucker, convicted in May on Whitewater-related charges, received a four-year suspended sentence yesterday following testimony by a transplant surgeon who said Tucker would likely die of liver disease if he was sent to prison. Tucker was ordered to pay $294,000 in restitution and interest to the U.S. Small Business Administration, as well as a $25,000 fine, and perform community service. And domestic law enforcement specialists at the Federal Bureau of Investigation are planning to nearly double their presence overseas during the next 4 years, opening offices in 23 foreign cities to cope with what they say is a dramatic expansion of international terrorism, organized crime, and narcotics trafficking that affects U.S. citizens. Jack Kemp, the number two man on the Republican ticket that has made much of Robert Dole's military service, was excused from active duty in the early 1960s for a shoulder problem, but continued playing pro football. Kemp in the Army Reserve received a medical exemption after Army doctors who examined him in October 61 determined that a shoulder injury he suffered playing football a month earlier made him unfit for active duty. And according to the Census Bureau, children make up nearly half of Americans living in chronic poverty. Child welfare advocates said the report paints a grim picture for poor children, as President Clinton says he will be signing the welfare repeal bill that will toughen work standards for welfare recipients and shorten the length of time families could receive assistance. And finally, E. Digby Baltzell was thinking about saving space when he squeezed the abbreviation WASP into the tables of his 1964 book, Protestant Establishment. In so doing, the University of Pennsylvania sociologist coined a term that caught on and has become a permanent addition to our language. Baltzell, himself a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, was one of America's foremost authorities on the ruling elite. He died at a Boston hospital this weekend of a heart attack at the age of 80. You're listening to Democracy Now! Last night in Los Angeles, consumer advocate Ralph Nader accepted the Green Party nomination for president, pledging to help lead a citizen fight to restore democracy to our political system. Pacifica's Robin Urovich was at the Green Party convention and has this report.
Ralph Nader told his supporters that he's not a spoiler in this year's presidential race. The system, he says, is already spoiled.
We're sick and tired and weary of being told every 4 years we have to choose between the bad and the worst, because every 4 years they both get worse. Because we don't look kindly on two parties who are about to sign into law a increased child poverty legislation where they literally throw out the baby with the bathwater, so-called welfare reform.
The problem with American politics is corporate domination of both parties. The solution, Nader says, is democracy. He says that's the same remedy Americans used to do away with slavery, win the vote for women, and establish labor unions. And he told the Greens if they practice democracy by building their party, they'll do away with what he calls the two-party duopoly.
They are Dem reps or Rep Dems, depending on your choice. They are George Ronald Clintons,
From this point on, Nader will be actively campaigning by speaking and taking advantage of free media. But he won't raise money for the campaign. That, he says, is up to state organizations. Most of the 300 or so Green Party faithful at the conference long ago rejected the notion that a vote for a third-party candidate might tip the election in favor of the Republicans. Not so for writer and activist Ronnie Duggar, one of the few national figures to come out in support of Nader.
Angrily, sadly, and with trepidation, I have finally been driven to the decision that I will never vote for a sold-out Democrat for president again. There is risk and danger in being for Nader, and there is more risk and danger in being for Clinton. The logic of voting for the lesser of two evils assumes that we are talking about two separate evils. But on nearly every important issue, and on the one overriding issue of our time, the usurpation of our self-governance by the corporate oligarchy, the Democratic and Republican parties are now the same evil.
I am by my nature not someone who is inclined to participate in electoral politics.
Native American environmental organizer Winona LaDuke addressed the convention via videotape. Her decision to support Nader, she says, wasn't an easy one either.
That is because the Native community, for example, was not given the right to vote until 1924. And in a system that is based on one man, one vote, it is ironic that we were never given the right to vote until after we were a distinct minority. The reality is that the situation is getting worse and worse for all kinds of people in this country. I believe that it is time for people to stand and make a change. It is time for people to say, we don't want a larger piece of the pie. We want a different pie.
On behalf of all of the DC Green Party, I pledge our electors, our three electoral votes, to Ralph Nader for president. Thank you.
As is traditional in U.S. political conventions, delegates from some 20 states rose to the podium to pledge their electoral votes to Nader. He's currently qualified as a candidate in 12 states, but Greens say he'll probably end up on about 30 state ballots November 5th.
I am extremely happy to be able to say that we in Maine, and I on behalf of the people in Maine, pledge four electoral votes for Ralph Nader for president.
But other similarities between the Green gathering and 90s political conventions were hard to detect. There were no schmaltzy videos, no testimonials by children or spouses. There was a lot of heated open debate over issues that are still unresolved, like a national party structure, the selection of a vice presidential candidate, and inclusion of women and people of color. California Green activist Kwasi Nkrumah says he's concerned about Nader's failure to lead the fight against racism.
More concerned with what seems to me kind of a reluctance on his part to take on some of the most critical issues that are confronting the nation. And of course, always and everywhere, the most contentious issue in this country has always been, and it's difficult, has been racism. We're going through a tremendous period here that is possibly going to define and redefine the nature of our society for years on that front. And I'm not sure that Nader has taken strong out front positions on that. And racism as a way of life, as a cultural issue, as a psychological motivator, so many things, and in terms of political economy, is a factor which in our society could no more be ignored than it could have been in South Africa.
Although the Green Party platform mentions women's and immigrants' rights and affirmative action, Nader says he won't address those issues.
I've made the decision that, number one, I don't want to blur the focus on the tools of democracy which affect those issues. If people who are concerned about those issues were more accessible to the media and powerful, et cetera, they would be able to shape in the marketplace of ideas their preferences and their sense of justice. So I don't want to blur it, because the minute you take a position on 20, 30 issues, and there are at least that you could take a position on, then you blur the focus on the essential issue of power.
And Nader's also been criticized for not making his tax returns public, as is customary among presidential candidates.
Customary, but flagellating and foolish, because the critical issue of privacy in our country as a barrier to corporate intrusion and manipulation and government intrusion and manipulation means that whether it's credit information, medical data, income tax data. That is a matter between the individual and the U.S. Treasury.
A victory for the Nader campaign would be a chance to participate in the presidential debates. Part of the criteria for inclusion is ballot status in states with enough electoral votes to give the candidate a theoretical chance to win the election. As the Green gathering was drawing to a close, campaign strategists were scrambling for volunteer organizers willing to immediately head for Kentucky and Alabama, the states they figure could put them over the top. For Pacifica, I'm Robin Yurovich in Los Angeles.
In accepting his nomination last night, Ralph Nader spoke to Green Party activists for over 2 hours and gave a speech chock full of examples of how corporations are destroying American democracy, from corporate control of our economy to corporate crimes that have gone unpunished. But Nader's main theme was that individuals can make a difference if you believe in your power as citizens, band together, and speak the truth. Here are some excerpts from Nader's first formal address as a candidate for the presidency of the United States, excerpts you won't hear on Nightline.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. You must know that you were responsible for all this. All I did was accept. Some of the prior speakers touched on a number of issues, and as I was listening to them, what occurred to me is that most of the issues and the subjects that the Green Party is adhering to are majoritarian issues in the United States of America. And this is what commended the Green Party so much to those of us who were not in on the founding is that if you look very carefully at the Green Party platform that's being proposed for your approval, this is by far the most comprehensive, broad-based platform that deals with the wide range of systemic justice that's needed in this country, from the political to the corporate to the cultural, the civil liberties and civil rights, a platform of any party in the country. I wouldn't begin to compare it with the flaccid, insipid, empty, cowardly platforms of the Democratic and Republican Tweedledum Tweedledee Party. Somehow these two-party platforms don't realize that society rots from the head down like a fish and is built from the bottom up. As a matter of fact, the Democratic Party platform doesn't even contain an affirmation of universal health coverage for all Americans. It even backed off of that while it took money from the hospital lobby, the medical lobby, the drug industry lobby, the giant HMOs, and insurance lobby. And as far as the Republican platform is, this one could have been written by the Fortune 100. Corporations, you must know something I don't know. There's no mention of the corporate crime epidemic in America that the Wall Street Journal and Barron's Financial Weekly print stories about almost every day. There's no mention about corporate welfare. Why would they mention campaign finance reform? They sailed into San Diego on a sea of corporate cash. It's a wonder they didn't slip off their seats. Tobacco cash, insurance cash, oil cash, auto cash, you name it, it was there. Cash register politics. You know, the the Democrats, in their desperate display of political mimicry of the Republicans, are driving Bob Dole to distraction. Every time he makes a public policy statement, he precedes it by saying, I hope that Bill Clinton doesn't get this ahead of me because he'll deliver it. It's almost a boilerplate phrase. I understand Susan Molinari did that in her speech as well. It's like saying, stop from being so much like us. What does that tell you about competitive politics in America today? Not much. I suppose the theme of what we're all about is titled, I the Citizen, We the People. I the citizen, the self-reliant, civically informed, assertive, involved, engaged, public citizen, joining with others to make it we the people. The two are inseparable from each other. Underneath all our respective social, economic, political problems and abuses and injustices rest the quality of our democracy. Democracy is the greatest problem-solving mechanism ever devised. That's why so many people intuitively, if not empirically, like it so much. And democracy is always a work in progress, and in some countries, it's got a long way to go. And the dictatorships that rule those societies have a lot of difficulty solving any problems because they're so busy producing them. In our country, our democracy's gone through fluctuations. Some generations experience a resurgence where the people get a break, they get organized, they get rights and remedies, and then the entrenched powers, in our country, it's mostly corporate power, counteract and begin wearing down the gains of the past. And as far as citizens are concerned, what they have to confront is how much time they're going to put in their lives as private citizens, taking care of themselves and their family, and how much time they're going to put as public citizens, taking care of the community, the society, the nation, the world. When we spend too much time on our private citizen lives because we're having a hard time making ends meet or for other reasons, and we don't spend enough time on our public citizen lives, we will never have happy private citizen lives. And it's that balance that is out of balance. Too much in this country have people given up on themselves. The greatest power of the corporate state is not their power. The greatest power they have over the people is the widespread feeling among millions of Americans that they don't count, they don't matter, and why try? Why try? Because the powers that be will decide for them. Whether they get laid off or not from their work, whether they grow up in toxic chemical exposures, whether they're sent off to foreign adventures, whether they're bled dry in taxes that go to unproductive investments through Washington and state capitals. They just seem to have lost control. And you see that everywhere. It doesn't matter whether they're liberals or conservatives, moderates, or anarchists, libertarians, whatever. They feel they have lost control over almost everything that affects them. Whether it's the marketplace, the workplace, the government, the streets, the environment, their own children. And it's that recovery that spells the future of democracy as a problem solver, as a fulfiller of human possibilities in our country. Now, when we talk about democracy, we're going to be very specific. You'll notice the two major parties, when they give all kinds of statements and addresses to the public, they have all kinds of words that they use to make people feel good. But there's one word that is increasingly short supply in both the statements of the Democrats and the Republicans, and that is the great work of human beings on Earth. And that word is justice.
Ralph Nader, speaking last night in California, accepting his Green Party nomination for president. We'll be playing more of his speech when we come back on Democracy Now! In just a minute. Listening to Democracy Now!, Pacifica Radio's daily grassroots election show. I'm Amy Goodman. While CNN and C-SPAN brought you the presidential nomination speeches of Bob Dole and Ross Perot, and will certainly do so for Bill Clinton, not to mention the broadcast networks, none carried Ralph Nader's nomination speech last night from UCLA. Because of that, we are devoting today to excerpts of that speech. We thought we might be playing the whole thing, but because it was more than 2 hours, we're just bringing you large chunks. Again, Ralph Nader speaking last night, accepting his presidential nomination from the Green Party.
Now, any knowledge of history registers this observation. Any society that allows one segment of it to have an excessive concentration of power and wealth, and that segment has a commercial, mercantile priority above every other value system in the society, is going to get in trouble. And we have, from time to time, as a society, fought back against the big robber barons and the railroads and the banks and the financial and natural resource companies, etc. But in the last 20 years, we have had an extraordinary concentration of power and wealth in fewer and fewer global corporation hands. And you can see the consequences of that in so many ways. When you have that kind of concentration of power and wealth, you have a weakened democracy. You have a weakened public voice. You have a weakened public advocacy. And that registers. And look how it's registered. Look at the signs of decline in this country because our democracy has not been allowed to strengthen itself, because we don't spend enough time as public citizens, because we have allowed global corporations with no allegiance to our country scour the globe for the dictatorships and the dirt cheap labor to exploit and export the jobs there. We have allowed them to take over our government, to dominate our economy, to exploit small business, to straitjacket inventors, to shape our very culture, to replace our folk culture with commercial culture that stresses violence and addiction, to decide what kind of research is done at our universities, to decide that the ordinary people pay the taxes. As someone once said, only the little people pay taxes. to decide that they, the corporations, weren't going to pay any taxes. And now look at the result. In the 1950s, corporate income tax represented between 25 and 30% of the federal outlays. Today, it's between 6 and 8%. Record corporate profits, record stock market prices, record executive compensations, and they are paying a shrinking amount. And many of these giant corporations pay 1% federal tax, 2% federal tax. How about this one? Everybody watching this assemblage, whoever paid a dollar to Uncle Sam between the years 1981 and 1983, paid more taxes than the giant General Electric Company, which produced $6.5 billion in profits, paid no taxes because of a safe harbor loophole provision, got a $150 million refund, and that was supposed to be to get General Electric to invest in new productive capital equipment. Instead, they bought RCA, NBC, and now maybe you wonder why NBC isn't covering the close down of four nuclear plants in Connecticut, three of which are closed down due to safety defects this summer. Well, General Electric's in the nuclear business. What do you expect? Now,
we're live on the campus of UCLA in Los Angeles, and this is a talk to the Green Party.
The intonation should be, go we go. Go we go. All right. Now, for all those super rich Pollyannas who think America is number one, look what they and their corporate cohorts have done to America to make it far less than number one. In 1980, the U.S. was first in wages in the world. It's now 11th and sinking. In 1980, the U.S. was the greatest creditor in the world. It's now the biggest debtor in the world. Today, we're 17th in the world in infant mortality. We have 23% child poverty. Think about that. Almost one out of every four children in America live in dire poverty, with all that means in terms of stunted human potential, health hazards, safety hazards, brutalization, and surroundings that you wouldn't want to have to describe with any equanimity. You know what the child poverty rate is in the Netherlands and Sweden? 3% in Netherlands, 2% Sweden. We're the only country industrialized in the world that doesn't have universal health insurance. Over 40 million. Over 40 million Americans, many of them children, have no health insurance. 20 million are underinsured, and the rest wonder when they're going to fall through the cracks when they change jobs, pre-existing conditions, co-payments, deductibles, exclusions, cancellations. Hey, this is the land of the free, home of the brave. What gives? The GNP is up. 80% of the American people have suffered a decline in income and wealth adjusted for inflation in the last 20 years. 1% of the richest people have taken two-thirds of the financial wealth increase in the 1980s, 1%. The wealth of 90% of the American people barely is equal to the wealth of the top 2%, even the 1%, depending on which figures you rely on. Imagine, that kind of concentration of wealth is greater than any country in Western Europe, greater than in Japan. We now have the greatest disparity in wealth and income between the rich and the rest of the American people of any country in the Western industrialized world. And we used to have the least inequality because Europe was so class stratified with their barons, etc. Imagine the decline. The hunger in this country. While the taxpayers are forced to pay the Cargills and the Continental grains to store all that food that's rotting in the warehouses. And just imagine, corporations are contributing 50% less to private pensions and workers who are lucky enough to have private pensions. And it keeps getting worse. Homelessness is up. You know, some of you who went abroad years ago came back to the U.S. and said, am I glad I'm back in the USA? And someone would say, why? Well, you say, you know, people there are afraid to drink the water. They got to have bottled water. They say, you know, you got the poor there. They're buying lottery tickets. Can you imagine? They hardly have enough money, and they're out there hoping for the big bang to buy the lottery tickets. And you know those countries? They think imported products are higher quality than products made in their own country. And on and on and on. Just look at this figure, if you will. We have been exposed to so-called free trade dogma for over 20 years now. They keep saying it'll work out all well for America. It'll work okay, American workers. What have we had for 20 years? Record trade deficits, which means record exporting of jobs. How? What's the latest nostrum by the free trade dogmatists? GATT and NAFTA, designed to envelop our democratic processes underneath an autocratic governance system with headquarters in Geneva, with secret tribunals, closed harmonization committees, equivalence procedures, and all the mumbo-jumbo that spell three things. One, that under GATT, the nations that treat their people more humanely are the ones who get in trouble. The countries who treat their people inhumanely are the ones that don't get in trouble. Because if we have strong consumer, workplace, and environmental standards, other countries can say, those are really indirect trade barriers. They're keeping out pesticide-laden food from Brazil or unsafe automobiles from the European community. And they take us to Geneva. And if we lose, we have to repeal these safety and health laws or pay tribute economic fines for these countries before secret tribunals that are closed to the public and have no independent appeal. Can you imagine suppressing our democratic processes by these kinds of autocratic systems of government? And harmonization, you know what that is? That means we'll never be first in health and safety standards because we have to meet in closed doors with other signatory nations and figure out how many dolphins are going to die, how much reformulated gasoline is going to be allowed, what kind of safety devices on our cars are going to be permitted. Lowest common denominator, harmonization. Meat and poultry inspection harmonization meetings are going on now under GATT. This is a subversion of the progress that we've made and a chilling of future progress. Those of you who want to have stronger cancer prevention standards apply to industry. Next time you propose them, you may well get a letter from the State Department saying, well, we respect your indulgence here, but don't waste your time. This proposal is GATT illegal. Do you know that we ban child labor in this country, but if we pass a law in Congress that bans the importation of products manufactured by brutalized child labor in other countries, that we will be defeated before the tribunal of the World Trade Organization? And we will have to repeal that law or pay tribute economic fines perpetually to the countries such as India or Bangladesh or others who are allowing this kind of tens of millions of children to be so horribly exploited? We're losing our sovereignty. Now, notice what happens when the GNP goes up in the aggregate and the yardsticks show growth, but it's decline for more and more of the American people. What happens is people start fighting people. The big guys at the top begin dividing and ruling. And middle class is told, hey, it's those poor people on welfare. Why, they're eating your taxes alive. Have you ever heard of these big guys at the top say, hey, it's those rich guys on welfare. They're really eating you for the house and home. You know, it's amazing One sign of propaganda is devoid of fact because it's full of lies. And here's the propaganda. If you ask the average citizen in this country, what percent of federal outlays goes to means-tested poverty entitlement programs? You know, that's food stamps, AFDC, child support, child nutrition, school lunches. I doubt whether many of them would say 3.4% of entire federal outlays. Now, when you ask them, how much do you think goes for corporate welfare? Well, suddenly there's a lack of statistics. But even the Wall Street Journal estimated it at $140 billion a year. $140 billion a year. But if you take corporate welfare in terms of subsidies, bailouts, giveaways, inflated government contracts, tax loopholes of the grossest sort, and forgiveness of corporate debt, you're up to over $200 billion a year easily. And yet, when the citizen groups go up to Congress and say, please, can we have $50 million more for safe drinking water systems in America? Sorry, no money. Can we have $300 million for equal justice under law called legal services of the poor? Oh, no, we can't afford it. Can we have $300 million for public broadcasting, little wholesome programming for children instead of the violence they see on TV? Oh, no, no, no. Got to balance the budget. He said, well, what about? Yet this is the same Congress that funded billions of dollars for the biggest mass transit program back a few years in our country. You know what it was? The MX missile. This is the same that pumps billions of dollars into antiquated or redundant or unnecessary mass weapon systems. I mean, just imagine the grotesque allocation of the federal budget. If the family allocated its budget the way the federal government under corporate power allocates its budget, the family would be committed. What if an average family spent 20% of its budget against a non-existent enemy? Another 15% of its budget to make the people living in the mansions on the hill richer, and then wrung its hands when it came down to feeding the children, to providing them with health care, to providing them with a decent education, clothing, and housing. Our federal budget has enormous money that is being misused and wasted and escalated up from the middle class to the rich and the corporate, which can be used to produce millions of jobs in public works, in building, rebuilding, repairing America. Notice.
You're listening to Ralph Nader on KPFK and KPFT Pacifica Radio, live from the campus of UCLA in Los Angeles, in McGowan Hall. Ralph Nader speaking to the Green Party.
For those Americans who stay home and don't vote because of their disgust with Tweedledum, Tweedledee corrupt politics, I say your slogan should be, we're not staying home anymore.
Ralph Nader accepting his presidential nomination from the Green Party last night. He was speaking at UCLA in Los Angeles. When we come back on Democracy Now!, the rest of, or at least a good portion of, Ralph Nader's more than 2-hour speech. Stay with us. ¶¶ This is Democracy Now! On Pacifica Radio. I'm Amy Goodman. We are now playing the speech that you didn't hear on TV last night. Ralph Nader was speaking at UCLA, accepting the presidential nomination from the Green Party. In this segment of his speech, he lays out solutions.
Our country is beset by problems it doesn't deserve and solutions it doesn't apply. Look at the basic problems. Energy. Solar energy, energy efficiency, those are the solutions. They're being proven all over the country. Housing, housing, housing. There are pilot housing projects showing the way to go, so we don't have this disgraceful, inadequate, decrepit, decayed housing stock, not to mention the homeless. It's a scar on all our consciousness that there are homeless people. Many of them working poor, many of them veterans, many of them who can't make a go on $4.25 an hour, while the legislators are increasing their salaries to $64 an hour, plus all kinds of health insurance and other benefits. Healthcare. We have the solution to health care. No solutions are perfect, but they certainly are a lot better than the problems. Universal health care, the single payer Canadian system. In Canada, you have free choice of doctor, hospital on 10% of their economy, maybe 11% now. Everybody has access to health care from cradle through nursing home. And I might add, our country's going to spend 15% this year on health care, with tens of millions of people being excluded, dropped out, or otherwise underinsured. The Conservative Party in Ottawa built up a huge deficit. The Liberal Party is now squeezing the provinces in terms of the contribution to the health care budget. But by comparison with our problems, we should have Canada's problems in terms of health care coverage. Modern public transit, all kinds of new technologies, flexible, fast, safe. Look at the work done at Northwestern University for almost 30 years on this subject, and ask yourself, why don't we have the kind of modern public transit that's fast, reliable, that's very close to zero polluting? We have the solutions. Agriculture, instead of highly chemical intensive agriculture burning the earth, contaminating farmers and farm workers alike in one of the more occupationally hazardous workplaces in the country. It's been proven again and again. Pest management control, organic agriculture, all kinds of crop rotation. Education at best is now a trade school. It's just a job training center at best for corporations, instead of the liberal education, the civic education that needs to go on up in colleges. They're vocational schools now, preparing themselves to be small cogs in big corporate wheels, instead of learning how to be civically skilled. Why don't we do that? The most important skill in America today is citizenship skills. It should be taught in elementary school, in high school, in college, in graduate school. And taught by connecting the classroom to the community so that youngsters can work under adult supervision and learn how to practice democracy and become understanding of what they have to do to build the future for our country and the world. Tools of democracy should be a priority for the Green Party and citizens all over the country. The labor laws have to be upgraded. They cannot be utilized by industrial workers in particular. So weakened have they become. The taxpayers should have checkoffs on tax returns to deal with taxpayer assets being ripped off by corporations, like the federal lands, like medical research and development, like all kinds of innovations that the taxpayer has paid for. It is outrageous. It is outrageous that a woman with ovarian cancer has to pay Bristol-Myers Squibb over $10,000 for a series of treatments to get the drug Taxol, which was developed from A to Z by $31 million of taxpayer money out of the National Institutes of Health and given free with no price control and no royalties back to you, the taxpayer, to Bristol-Myers Squibb that immediately priced it at over $10,000. The same occurred to AZT. The same occurred to all kinds of drugs where sick people are now expected to fork over $50,000, $100,000. This is in America, when many of these drugs were paid for or substantially paid for by tax money in terms of the National Institutes of Health Drug Research and Development Program. Our elections and election procedures need change. The way you get public elections of public funding of public elections. And you know, what's the alternative? It's either General Motors, General Electric, or DuPont funding our elections, or it's public financing of elections. It can be done. It's simple. Check this out. The best investment return in the history of the world is the $1 billion that corporate sourced campaign money puts into federal elections every 2 years. Can you imagine the tens of billions of dollars they get in return, corporate welfare, the non-enforcement of health and safety laws, the inflated and wasteful government contracts, the seizure of the public lands, the appropriation of all these taxpayer assets? $1 billion. What's $1 billion? They have $12 billion in debt erased with one paragraph, $8 billion in another. They get away with $100 billion of health care fraud just on the bills that they submit. Pretty soon it adds up to real money. Now, how do we replace that $1 billion every 2 years? First of all, by a well-promoted voluntary dues checkoff on the 1040 tax return, up to $100 per taxpayer, if the taxpayer chooses to contribute, and a certain amount of free time on radio and TV for ballot qualified candidates. And guess what? That amounts, by the way, to about $7 per taxpayer per year, per every 2 years, excuse me. And it will be less than $1 billion every 2 years because they won't have to spend so much money to raise it. So public financing of public elections. The $1 billion displacement movement must start immediately. How about ballot access barriers? Our political electoral system is not kind to small political starts. It's not kind to acorns. It says to the acorn, you got to be an oak tree. Voila, immediately before you get on the ballot or you qualify. Now, what's interesting here is this. Because there are so few independent petitions for presidential candidates by grassroots groups, a number of states had barriers that were surmountable. What happened in the last 8 years? As more and more third-party candidates got on, states like Texas started passing laws to make it more onerous, a larger number of signatures, a larger number of disqualifications in order to get, through petition, a candidate on the ballot. And that's what you're going to confront in the next legislative sessions of the states. The two-party duopoly wants to control the electoral arena, and they will do everything to exclude petitions and citizen parties from competing with them. And that has got to be removed so that a real, genuine tool of democracy means the ease of getting on the ballot. And how about more direct democracy when representative democracy makes a mockery of itself because it's in hock to special interest groups? The initiative, the referendum, the recall should be in every state of the union. And those Republicans who campaigned in New Jersey to elect a Republican governor and a Republican legislature on the promise that they would bring to New Jersey the initiative referendum recall, double-crossed the voters, and pursued business as usual. That's why you can't rely on this kind of elected officials and why we have to have the direct democracy insurance policy. How about this? None of the above. Binding, none of the above. In our country, you can't go to the polls and vote no. All you can do is either vote yes for somebody or stay home and not vote and be called apathetic and a dropout. How do you vote no? How do you say you don't care for the candidates on the ballot? You vote. Even Green will have a none of the above on the ballot. It's part of the platform. Binding none of the above congeals a protest vote, a no vote, a go back and give us something better. And if none of the above wins and gets more votes than the other candidates on the ballot, it cancels the election, sends the candidates packing, and orders a new election 30 days from now.
This is KPFK Los Angeles, KPFT Houston. Ralph Nader speaking to the Green Party convention, accepting the nomination for president that the Green Party voted upon just a couple of hours ago.
By the way, we now have a project out of Pennsylvania to advance the binding none of the above, whether by initiative or by legislation. By initiative, it's much more likely. It can be done at the local level, for starters, at the state, eventually at the national level. I love to see the politicians who've been defeated by none of the above. No longer will they be able to say to the American people, vote for one of us or stay home. That's the key change. Term limits. I'm for 12 years term limits on the grounds that most people, after 12 years in Congress or in state legislatures, with almost no exception, maybe one or two out of 100, either sell out or wear out. They get resigned. They start throwing in the towel. They get eroded. They tire. New energies are needed. And so let's start thinking about how can we develop these more powerful citizen tools of democracy for workers, taxpayers, consumers, voter citizens, and investor shareholders, especially through pension plans. Do you know that the labor pool of pension money, if it was controlled by the workers through intermediate mechanisms, could control many of the large corporations on the New York Stock Exchange, because that's where the money is invested. Isn't it time that we made a national political issue out of this enormous anomaly? That we own the public airwaves but don't control anything. That we own the public lands but don't control our public lands. That we own $4 trillion of pension monies and don't control their investment. That we own trillions of dollars of mutual insurance and mutual savings. And the banks and the insurance companies and other corporations control what we legally own. And that's partially a problem that comes from growing up corporate, from being told from when we were very young that if we work hard and make money, we'll be able to own individual property like a car, a boat, a home, a piece of land. But we're never told that we are already owners by virtue of our birthright, of the great commonwealth of resources and assets, from the natural resources on the public lands to the huge pools of capital controlled by the grip of a few giant corporate investors. And so, we need to keep looking to reconstruct civic communities. Where there is no community, there is crisis. Without people, nothing is possible. Without institutions, nothing is lasting. We have to keep creating them. The corporate juggernaut is such that it cannot tolerate strong countervailing communities, whether of workers, whether of parties that are independent of them, whether they're consumer associations, whether they're students who want to band together for civic engagement and improvement of their society. It's really not surprising that many of the things they're doing against public education, against community services, the whole privatization, the whole corporatization movement is designed to take public communities and turn them into private profit-making centers where the sense of community service and obligation is eliminated. That's what user fees are all about. Oh, you want to use the library? You got to pay every time you go in there. Pay as much as you use. The library in America was built as a community service. Community supported. You want to use the national parks? Oh, you got to pay. If you don't use it, you don't pay. It breaks the whole community service apart. And they're doing this now in the healthcare industry at some extreme level.
Consumer advocate Ralph Nader accepting the Green Party nomination for president last night in California. You know, the New York Times says today that Nader has been somewhat out of the limelight in recent years. I think frozen out would be a better way of putting it. And after hearing this speech, you may have a better idea about why those corporations that shine the limelight, the media, has kept it away from him. Democracy Now! Is produced by Julie Drizin and engineered by Kenneth Mason here at the studios of WPFW in Washington. Thanks to the staff of KPFK who brought us this speech of Ralph Nader's last night. We welcome your response to his speech and the Green Party ideas. Call our listener comment line at 202-588-0999, extension 313. That's 202-588-0999, extension 313. Or write us via email at democracy@pacifica.org. That's democracy@pacifica.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening to another edition of Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!